Okay, that is not me, but thank you all for being here. But when you're especially working with undergrads, and I work with undergrads and grads, and teaching environmental health, some of them come in getting it already, have, you know, a sense of it. But others think of it, when they think of the environment, they think of some pristine, lovely place that they go, you know, picnic, and are not thinking about the environment in the way that perhaps we are. So I have no conflicts or disclosures or any such thing. So one thing I want folks, if how many nurses in the audience? Okay, so I want to make sure that you know that in 2010, when the ANA redefined the scope and standards of professional nursing practice for the first time, they included an environmental health standard. So this now firmly plants environmental health into our domain, and therefore we need to make sure we're teaching to that. So what I've discovered, I mean, for many of you, when you teach public health, you do a windshield survey of a community, and that is a really terrific time to do a lot of work on environmental exposures, you know, passing dry cleaners and, you know, older housing stock, all kinds of things that most of you are familiar with. So what I'm going to be doing here is hoping to gift you with maybe one or two new resources that you may or might not be aware of, or some of you may be using all of them, but I wanted to kind of put it into a toolbox, and I'm going to put this on the Environ website, the whole thing, including all the live links, so that you could go there. So the very first thing that I start with, which may not seem intuitive, is I have the students figure out what they put on themselves that day. And so they start out with their very personal environment, and they have to take two of their personal care products and go to the database that was created by Skin Deep, put this in, and you can put in the exact product. I mean, you can put in Estee Lauder, Make My Lips Beautiful and Shiny All Day Long Red. You know, you can put that exact thing, and you get the information on that. And you will get a relative, sort of a relative risk of where that sits in terms of reproductive health hazards and carcinogens or carcinogenicity, et cetera. Once we've had them a little bit alerted to the fact that there may be some problems with their cosmetics, we also then send them to the Safe Cosmetics website, which is really about the campaign for Safe Cosmetics. We send them to the Breast Cancer Fund. And Connie, raise your hand, because she's a staffer with the Breast Cancer Fund, and she's awesome around this issue and some other issues. So the students start to already think about chemicals in their environment in a different way. Another wonderful thing that you can send them to watch as a homework assignment is the story of cosmetics. If you've never seen the story of stuff, you have to see that. It is a wonderful, fun kind of analysis of the stuff of our world, how it's extracted from the earth through manufacture, through disposal, and what the human and public health effects are of that. So we send them to that to look at that. So then what the little thing that happens in just that one exercise is they don't only become critical consumers. I have to tell you, my students change what they use. And at the end of my course, because I teach a whole course in this, they change what they eat, they look at their kids' toys differently, and so on. But so it's not just making them critical consumers, it's making them critical thinkers in the process. We also look at other things that are in their household. So we move from their personal care products to a range of things that, you know, maybe on the front page news or not, but they're nurses. So we want to make sure they're going to good databases for sources of information. And so these are toys and art supplies, cleaning supplies, pet supplies. And also we want specifically for them to look at pesticides, because after all, these are sides, and the suffix sides means to kill, like homicide, you know, genocide, suicide. This is a bad word. So we want them to be particularly alert to chemicals that have at their end. And so where I send them, I mean, I could send them to a multitude of nonprofit organizations that do have excellent information, but I don't. I send them to the National Library of Medicine's data source. It's a source that I feel we can be very comfortable with. It's peer-reviewed data. It's credible information. And they have the household data products database. You just have to put that in the web. And they've got auto products, as you can see, personal care products as well, but they've got pesticides, art supplies, just a whole range of things you can put the brand name in. So then I have them go into their house and do two household products, find that information out. And there's a limitation to this in that, and the same is true with the cosmetics databases. The information in it is based on what the manufacturer says is in their products. So there may be proprietary information left out. There may be things like fragrance, which is not a chemical fragrance, is a title of an umbrella of chemicals. So there are some things that won't be perfect about that. But some of you, and we did this in a separate set of sessions over APH over the year, we've created several different assessment tools. And so this was one that we created for home health assessment of environmental risks. And I have the students do it on their own homes or their parents' homes if they're young students. And then we go through looking at the whole range of things. So, I mean, wood-burning stoves and air emissions, lead, carbon monoxide, water. And as we're looking through what might be their exposures, we also discuss who's in charge of these. Because there's not a single agency. Sometimes it's local, state, federal. Sometimes it's no agency at all. And so they begin to understand sort of a little bit of a framing of environmental health. I also make sure that they know that there are some nurses whose body burdens specifically have been tested. And so Charlotte Brody is a nurse. She was not a manufacturing worker or a migrant worker in the field. And so they found in Charlotte's body, let me go this way and I'll turn back. They, of 214 chemicals that should never have been in Charlotte's body, they found, and they were known for toxicity, which is why they tested them, 87 were found that day in her urine or in her blood. Now, she's a nurse, and so I use this to help the students understand that we are toxic already in the sense that we've got chemicals that don't belong in our bodies. And so the specific range of these 87 chemicals came with peer-reviewed studies, more often than not animal studies. We hardly ever have, you know, big number epi studies. There have been some NHANES studies that have been done. But mostly from animal models, we discovered that there are a whole range of health risks associated with what was in this nurse's body. We also look at the physicians for social responsibility data that they came from doing body burdens of 8 nurses and 12 physicians, and they were specifically looking. Now, these are nursing students. Most of them are thinking they're going into a hospital to work. So these were chemicals that were chosen because they're commonly found in hospitals. And what they discovered when they did urine and blood sample on these doctors and nurses is that at least 24 chemicals were found in any given one of those 20 people. And you can see a whole range of BPA, for those who don't know, is bisphenol A plasticizer. EDC stands for endocrine disrupting chemicals, and you can see that there are a couple of occasions when these chemicals are known to be endocrine disrupting. And triclosan, or triclosan, it's like a potato patata, is used in hospitals widely in the hand washing soaps. And just recently, about 3 weeks ago, new data came out, so I added here, showing cardiotoxicity in addition to pretty very strong association with thyrotoxicity. So using this, because these are the bodies of people that are going to be very much like the students that we're working with. If you have not used ToxTown in teaching environmental health, it is a gift that the National Library of Medicine has given to all of us. So you can take, if you're in a rural area, you can go to the border community or the farm and look at common exposures there. But I'm going to take us through a little path here. I'm going to say that we're in an urban area and we want to go to ToxTown, which is created by the National Library of Medicine, very well peer-reviewed, also is translated into Spanish. So we're going to go to ToxTown's city. You see here that I'm going to kill myself. That you could, if you wanted to, go to a hair salon, find out what kind of toxicity is there. You could go to a funeral home and find out what kind of toxicity is found there. But I thought with our nursing students, let's go to the hospital. So if you just clicked on that hospital, now you get to the hospital and you can see, you can go to a patient's room, the operating room, you can go to a variety of places. And when you hit on any one of those chemicals, just put your cursor on it, it lights up the areas in the hospital where those chemicals are found. So the students who want to be operating room nurses can see that there's ethylene oxide there or other chemicals. So I'm going to then double click on ethylene oxide. And now this is just two of a whole slew of now you can see how you can keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into ToxDown. And your student, you don't have to make exercises that go quite this deep, but many of the students just keep going. And so here you'll see a whole variety of databases, specifically in ethylene oxide, which is specifically in hospitals, which is specifically going to be exposure to them. And so I went to the hazardous substance database and NLM database. And here, now you can drill down even more to the peer-reviewed papers you actually get, to the original papers, abstracts, and sometimes full-text papers. So these students, grad students, and I teach grad students and MPH students, so these students really have just a lot of stuff that they can look at. Also, when you are going to ToxDown, make sure you look at four teachers. There's a whole set of four teachers, and they've got all kinds of little exercises, assignments, things like that you can use. I didn't have enough time to show you everything. I could spend days with you. And also look at what's new, because that's going to be what's new. They took me in what's new to a new EPA database that is a separate little thing on join us for a house tour, and it shows you using EPA databases some of the hazards that can be found in the home. And that's separate. So now, EnviroFax, any of you used EnviroFax for your classes? This, all your students, it's all about them, right? They put in their zip codes. So you start with your zip code and you can find out about air quality, water, toxics, radiation. So if you drill down to that and put your zip in, for instance, what hazardous waste is being generated for my area of interest, you will find out poundage, the name of the chemical, and then you can go to the NLM databases, find out what the possible health risks might be. But I thought some of the others, like the what are the environmental levels of radiation in air, drinking water, precipitation, pasteurized milk in my area of interest? Do you know when the stuff happened in Japan? And they were starting to do some recording on the West Coast of milk and other products for radiation. This is a place that your students might be interested. There are many more boxes. Another one, what are the microbial levels in my water? Well, that's really important if you've got a patient who is an organ transplant recipient or who has HIV/AIDS. If you've got, if you're otherwise healthy, maybe these microbial levels are going to be okay. But what about vulnerability when you've got immune suppression? So talking to the nurses, about these environmental exposures and how they're pertinent to their patient. Another one is, what is the UV index that day in your zip code? So really important to know about if you're a school nurse and in other settings working with children, should they be outside? How about workers? So as you can imagine, the students kind of come back to class after they've had this homework assignment or this list of homework assignments, and they're like, how can those companies be shooting this stuff out into our air, and how can this stuff be in the how is that even possible? And they're really aggravated and agitated, and who's in charge of this, and what are the implications for nursing or mine? I mean, what are the implications for us being involved in this and being at the table and knowing a little bit more of the answers? And they get hot, and then they also don't want to drink or eat, or they want to sleep, but they don't want to breathe. So the other there's an old study that I think is really, really wonderful, done by Environmental Working Group years ago, where they took umbilical cord blood and they looked for toxic chemicals that should never be in the human body, that should never have been an adult in the human body, but that are in umbilical cord blood, indicating that the same mix, the same toxic soup mix that we're finding in adults are being found in newborns. Now, many nursing students, particularly undergraduates, are thinking at some point that they're going, or they already do have children. And so this one in particular gets them engaged from a sort of a more an emotional perspective. And then we have them using their evidence for this. So when we start talking about this as everybody's first environment, and that this is the environment that we focus on, kind of the eyes on the prize as nurses, if we are going to engage in a way that protects this environment, all the rest of the environments wind up okay, including the birds and the bunnies. If we protect this forest environment and decrease the number of toxic chemicals there. And so we have these conversations about the ethics and the policies and the politics, who's in control, who's in power. We also show them that there are some materials where they can green their own hospitals. This was created a combination or a collaboration between Healthcare Without Harm and the American College of Nurse Midwives on greening the birthing centers and the obstetrical units. It's got about PVC, about diethylhexyl phthalates, it's mercury-containing products. So want to give them things to do, not just tell them, oh, my God, all heck's breaking out, you know, loose. And, you know, there are things that they can do. So it is all about me at a certain level, but we really try and tool them up so that they understand that that there are a lot of different places to find out about things as a nurse. And another environmental working group has just a great assortment and a real wonderful website with a creative way of displaying information. Same is true of the Breast Cancer Fund's website. But I wanted to just show you a few. You know, you're going to have some people, some nursing students, especially in this region, who are interested in food-related stuff. So looking at Mediator's Guide to Climate Change and Health, looking at cell phone issues right now, often students come up with that question, and you'll see some of the other ones here that I've already talked about. Healthcare Without Harm is an NGO that has a lot of information and Practice Green Health both on healthcare hospital-based risks. And so what happens is that we start out thinking, really, it's all about me, or it's all about them, and then they realize it's all about us. And that we're in this together. That they can't go to a pristine part of the universe, because that's what they really want to do after the first exercise. Oh, I'll just move to Canada or Fiji or no, that's not going to work, because we've got international databases that show, in fact, the northernmost part of Canada, the circumpolar regions, some of the folks there have the highest levels of certain persistent pollutants in the world. So. So what I want them to also know, it's all about nursing. I mean, this is us owning this, and it's that it's in as integral to the work that we do as, you know, asking a patient whether they smoke or not, and we ask them that, and we ask them other questions about their lifestyle. We need to start asking them questions that help us to understand what their, not just what their exposures are, but what's our anticipatory guidance? What do we say to parents? What do we say to a woman in her first pregnancy? And there's also a whole bunch of good stuff that's been done on that too, but I'm sure I'm just about out of time. So I also wanted, if you don't know, and I've got little stickies for this, that the Enviro-N website was created by the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. And raise your hand in the room if you're active in ANE. So you can see there are four of you here, five. And we would really welcome the rest of you, if this is something you're interested in. We have an education work group, a practice work group that does both greening hospitals as well as greening our practice, our clinical practice. And then we also have a research work group and a policy and advocacy work group. We're working on chemical policies, climate change, fracking issues, and energy issues. And did I say climate change twice? And climate change. Did I say that? Pharmaceutical waste. Thank you. Pharmaceutical waste. So I welcome you all to go to our website. It's got BOKU resources there. And I want to thank you all, because I'm assuming that most of you are already starting to integrate environmental health into your curriculum. So is that okay?
That's okay. Thank you.